Maria Schneider has emerged over the past several decades as one of our most original composers and arrangers for jazz orchestra. She studied music theory and composition at the University of Minnesota, graduating in 1983, then earned a Master's of Music in 1985 from the Eastman School of Music, studying for 1 year as well at the University of Miami. Upon leaving Eastman, Gil Evans hired her as his apprentice arranger, and she collaborated with him for the next several years. Schneider went on to study with Bob Brookmeyer from 1986 to 1991, as she concurrently worked as a freelance arranger in New York. She formed the Maria Schneider Jazz Orchestra in 1993, appearing weekly at Visiones in Greenwich Village for 5 years. Her orchestra has also performed at many jazz festivals and toured Europe. Fast forward now to 2013, and a more classical voice is emerging from Maria Schneider with the issue of a recording of two song cycles, both written for Dawn Upshaw. I recently spoke to Maria about this latest project. It's interesting. You mentioned Brazil now, for it gives us an opportunity to talk about the latest project with Dawn Upshaw. I hope I'm correct in referring to these as song cycles. It's how I hear them. One cycle, Winter Morning Walks, is to poetry by Ted Kooser. The other, Carlos Drummond de Andrade Stories, gives you a chance to musically refer to Brazil.
That was the commission that I did first, was the Carlos Drummond de Andrade. In Brazil, he's kind of it. You know, he is their sort of one of their, you know, national treasure poets. And I love his poetry, and I've been influenced by Brazilian music for a long time, and one of the aspects of Brazilian music that I love is the prevalence of vocalese. And so the first movement that I wrote that I call Prologue, you know, it doesn't have any words, and it's using Dawn more like an instrument. And then, you know, the four poems that I picked, and I wanted to use English translations because I wanted the audience here to get the immediacy of, you know, hearing the word and the expression that's, you know, behind that word and the music. So those four poems, I didn't want to make them, you know, sound expressly Brazilian, but there are elements of choro, there's elements of flamenco, and I would say Latin music of different kinds, you know, maybe a little bit of Argentina, a little bit of Peru, a little bit of Brazil, a little bit of, it's kind of a mosh of things that influenced me that I just felt brought out some of the drama of the words.
I hear a little bit of Spain as well, especially in Don't Kill Yourself.
Yeah, that one definitely has a lot of flamenco. There's a rhythm in Spain in flamenco music called the bulería, and it uses something in music they call gemiola, where it's like the I want to be in America, you know, the 6-8 and then the 3-4, putting the accent on the different syllable, as they say. So that piece utilizes that rhythm. And those kind of rhythms are actually not easy to get happening with a classical orchestra. You know, it's even with my own band, who are used to those kinds of things, you know, it took them a while to sink into the bulería rhythm. But, you know, we got it, and they did a great job, the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra.
Carlos, calm down. Love is what you were seeing. A kiss today, tomorrow no kiss.
Well, I loved that, the rhythmic shifting back and forth, and you're telling me now exactly what it is that appeals to me about that. I also really loved the atmosphere and the nostalgia of the song Souvenir of the Ancient World. That's just
gorgeous. Oh, yeah, that's
gorgeous.
A beautiful poem. Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to make it just very simple. Yeah, it talks about Clara strolling in the garden and just kind of the the fact that we don't take the time, you know, anymore. You know, at the end when it says they had gardens, they had mornings in those days, you know, that she's just strolling in the garden in the morning with her children, and that's and the title, Souvenir of the Ancient World, it's beautiful. So I just tried to make something just beautiful.
Claire strolled in the garden with the children. The sky was green over the grass, the water was golden under the bridges. Other elements were blue and rose.
You know, I was just going to say something that, you know, beauty, or the appreciation of beauty in music, is something that really I started to let loose more in my music after I took my first trip to Brazil, because they are so unabashedly joyful and beautiful in their music. My music before I went to Brazil was very intense and kind of dark and brooding, and I would say very intense, dark and brooding, but quite dark and brooding and driving, kind of, you know, it had that sort of serious jazz musician vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I went to Brazil, and I think I realized that in a way there had been sort of this shame in embracing beauty, and I thought, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to embrace beauty. I love beauty. I love listening to beautiful songs. I'm not going to be afraid of writing a beautiful song. And so I've done that more and more in my music, and, you know, there are people out there that really don't like that, in, you know, that they don't think that somehow that's modern or that it's somehow relevant to the present day or something, and I think that's kind of crazy. It's a myth that simple is easy. I mean, easy is easy, but simplicity, when it's really, and that's one of the things I love about that Ted Kooser poetry. In a way, it just is just, you know, simplicity is what it is. But, you know, at the same time, it's so smart, the metaphors, and, you know, that just to make something really tug at you and really do something to you internally is a challenge.
You're reading my notes here exactly, because I've described the poetry of Ted Kooser as both intellectually and emotionally moving, and I stepped back and I thought, well, you know, it really, what strikes me is that it grips my heart, there's a sigh that you have to expel after reading each of those poems that you chose. There's an emotional quality and a beauty to it that's just overwhelming. But and yet there is something intellectually stimulating in the words as well.
Yeah, there's I think they're so smartly written. The metaphors. You know, like walking by flashlight at the end, where he refers to it as this man with the moon on a leash, you know, the light swinging side to side, and it's just so beautiful. I saw him give a course on writing poetry, and he has a wonderful, wonderful book about writing poetry. I forget what it's called. People can find it on Amazon, though. It's like the poet's repair manual or something like that. And he's wonderful at teaching and talking about metaphor, and because his metaphors are very powerful. It's not like he's just throwing metaphors all over the place, but they have a way of sometimes appearing at the very end of the poem and suddenly shifting the whole meaning of the poetry. It'd be like if you're looking at a landscape and all of a sudden the light breaks through the clouds and what you saw of the scene just suddenly changes with the light, you know, and that's what he does. I don't know. It's very magical, and I love that they're so moving.
Well, how in the world did you choose the poems that you used? Because there are quite a few that are in that particular collection. Am I correct in
referring to it? Yeah, there's 100 of them. And I'll tell you what, there are so many that are equally and even more beautiful. I mean, there's so many. So I Xeroxed the pages of the book of all the poems that I loved, and I picked probably 40 of them or 35 that I felt that somehow I could possibly make music out of, and that had the sentiment that somehow of something that I was looking for. And then I cut them out and I put them on, I have a big writing board, and I just put them all up so I could see them all at any given moment. And I would just look at them and just start seeing what they musically they would draw up out of me, you know, sitting at my piano playing, going inside my head, imagining. And these were the ones that sort of came out, you know, to the front and came out as music. But there were other ones. Oh, there's one about a light coming down and hitting a piece of metal, like a metal door or something, and he talks about how far has this light traveled just to hit this old tin, you know, piece of tin or something. It's so beautiful. And there's one about fear and describing a hay bale rolled up, wrapped up in sky blue nylon twine. It's like, oh, I love it.
How does the musician's ear dictate how you see the potential of a poem?
I sit there and something attaches itself to a musical idea or not. You know, that poem just said to me, just let me be a poem. I don't need music, you know, and other poems, Walking by Flashlight, I just heard that. It was just, that one just came out, you know, that opening, just the piano playing those in 4/4 chords, just very simple, and Dawn's melody. I don't even remember writing that. It came so easily. You know, that one just said, I just want to be a song, you know? I can't even tell you how that happens. It happens by you sitting there long enough and probably years worth of studying and working, and, you know, and you have this certain amount of knowledge that's innate within you at a certain point, and you just open your heart and you sit there and you concentrate and you just delve into your heart, the meaning of that word, and you just say, okay, you know, let's see what comes out of me, you know, and it's just, it's an intuitive response.
Walking by flashlight at 6. At 6 in the morning, my circle of light on the gravel swinging side to side.
What about the improvisatory element in winter morning walks, especially? How did you decide to write in that manner, and how do you decide where to make that shift? It's seamless to a certain degree, but it's really interesting to listen to, going from what obviously is a thoroughly composed to something that is improvisatory. How are those decisions made?
Well, firstly, the three musicians I got, and actually just about anybody in my orchestra, my jazz orchestra, you know, my musicians have been playing my music for years and understanding that what's most important about the improvisation is that it seamlessly fit into the context of the meaning of the composition. and my music is largely very story driven, you know, so they're almost like actors in a play, you know, it's almost theater. I'm not interested in somebody displaying, you know, all the technique that they can do purely to make a great sounding solo. It's got to be beautiful in the context of the piece. So the three players that I got are very, what I would call, you know, non-jazz jazz musicians. You know what I mean? They're open. They're just open-minded, and music is music for them. So, and the way I came to wanting to do that is after I performed the Drumone piece three nights with Dawn in Minneapolis, that's when we first premiered it, you know, I'm used to, at the end of a performance, my musicians all celebrating what each other created. You know, like, you know, somebody will be like, oh, man, you know, Rich, that thing you played was so beautiful. And, you know, when Frank and Lage played behind you and threw in those chords and then you took that turn, oh, my God, it was amazing. And, you know, I love to watch them celebrate their, you know, creation, their compositional creations on my music. And when it's all just right and it's all happening, you know, in context to the music, it just is so powerful. And when I did the Drumone, I felt so lonely because I felt all the musicians, they were playing their hearts out and playing so beautifully, but I'm so used to that element, and it wasn't there, you know. It was them trying to play the music really well for me. And I said to Dawn the next day, she asked me to write something for her for the Ojai Festival. And she was there with this man, Tom Morris, who runs that festival. And I immediately said, the next thing I write for you, I want to wrap you in some improvisation. Subtle. You don't have to improvise. You know, I don't want some crazy jazz-sounding thing, but I want the music to, if you're touring it from night to night, it changes a little bit about around you, and that you will have room and freedom to respond a little bit to that, so your response might be a little different every time. And Dawn, who had been listening to my band for years and loving it, was really excited about it. And so, you know, the result is what you hear. I mean, some of it, maybe all of it, you wouldn't even know people are improvising. But for instance, on Finch Feeder, the bass clarinet, he's improvising the entire time. Everything he plays, you know, that's trying to capture the wildness of the Finch Feeder in the wind, it's all improvised. You know, I mean, he knew what I wanted to evoke. And he did it. He was amazing.
Maria Schneider's Winter Morning Walks is available now in the marketplace. Amazon.com carries the album, or you may prefer to order directly from Maria Schneider at her website, mariaschneider.com. Be sure to listen for selections from Winter Morning Walks and Carlos Drummond de Andrade Stories on KPAC 88.3 FM. Thanks again, Maria, for your time and especially your wonderful music.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.